To be a wordsmith is defined as a person who writes, an author, a journalist, a person who commits their thoughts to paper. But I believe it is so much more. The ability to craft a story, to change lives, to transport the ordinary life to an extraordinary place, to put words on paper and awaken the imagination in ways the reader never dreamed possible. Yes, to have the ability to see what isn't there and make you see it too. To awaken the senses in new and amazing ways. To feel a cool breeze on a hot summer day on your cheeks. To smell wildflowers as they bloom. To taste a delicacy on a foreign soil. To feel like you've never felt before, touching places long forgotten. Connecting with your souls in new ways. That's what writers do. It's my pleasure to host Speaking of Writing, a new podcast. Speaking of Writing is open for authors from all over the world. This gives us an opportunity to broaden our experiences, to hear actual writers' voices, hear what inspires them, experience their trials and struggles, and realize that we all have a story, and they are all worth telling. I hope you enjoy this. This is Rose Cushing, and I'm the host of Speaking of Writing podcast, and my guest today is Matthew Carciolo, and he has written a book called The Waigook Book, and it is a guide for foreigners of South Korea. So, Matthew, tell us a little bit about you.
So I am a Columbus area native. I grew up here, went to Ohio State. And other than a couple years in Chicago and the 2 years I spent in South Korea that I talk about in the book, I've spent my whole life in Ohio, and I live in Hilliard with my wife and my two little boys.
So what took you to South Korea?
Yeah, so we were living in Chicago at the time, and I was there for grad school, and you know, we weren't quite ready to settle down and go back home. We wanted one more adventure. So my wife actually was the one that did the research. Like, you know what, let's go to teach English overseas somewhere. And we landed on South Korea. So that's what took us over there.
That's a really interesting place. My son was a black belt in Taekwondo, so he always wanted to visit Korea. Fascinated with it all of his life.
Yes, it is a fascinating place, that's for sure.
So tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, so while we were there in South Korea, again, we were there for 2 years. I was teaching in an elementary school. My wife was in middle school. I kept up a pretty casual blog just for friends and family back home to, you know, read about what we've been doing, and you know, I could post pictures and videos. And some of those blog posts were the foundations of what would become the book. So those blog posts and pictures ended up in a big fancy Shutterfly book that I made for myself for our 2 years. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was thinking, you know, even amongst English teachers here in South Korea, I have a few pretty unique experiences, and I want to write about them, you know, before it's too late, before I forget some of the finer details. So I just decided to keep on writing and fleshing out some of the original things I wrote, and out came a book.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, what kind of things do you suggest to people about South Korea in your book?
In terms of traveling or in terms of working there, because I have all kinds of suggestions inside the book. So
you basically covered all that.
I do.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about traveling to South Korea. What's the number one thing we should know?
Well, the first thing you should know is public transportation is incredibly easy to use and efficient. Like, you can take a train or a bus from almost anywhere, which is pretty cool. And they've got bullet trains, so it doesn't take long to get from one side of the country to the other. So what you're going to be looking at most of the time is a mixture of mountains, city, or farmland, so or beach. There's tons of shoreline there, obviously, because it's on a peninsula. So you just kind of pick and choose What, you know, among those things you want to see?
What town were you in?
We were in the city of Daegu, which is the third biggest city in Korea. It's the biggest inland city. Most of the people live either in Seoul or on the coast. And Daegu is in the southeastern part of the country, about an hour or two away from the coast. Decent-sized city, about 2.5 million people, and we were in the suburbs.
Okay. Was it a pretty area?
So, nearly the whole country is mountainous. So if you like mountains, it is pretty. I tell people to kind of envision like West Virginia or Tennessee, you know, kind of like that height of mountains, and you know, they've got forests. And it's a very similar climate as well. It's a temperate climate where it's, you know, it's chilly in the winter, but, you know, not too cool. Most of it's cold. And then summers are hot and very, very humid.
Right. Right. Well, it sounds really beautiful because I'm definitely a mountain person.
Oh, yeah. Well, they got tons of mountains.
So you guys were there for 2 years teaching?
We were. So originally we were only going to stay for 1 year, but every year at the end you have the option to continue your contract, and there's some pretty good incentives to do so. And we're like, you know what, we're having a good time. We've made a lot of good friends. Let's just stick around for another year and make some more money. And we hadn't done all the travel we had planned on doing. Like, yeah, let's just spend another year here. So we did too.
Was it a convenient place to travel to other Orient places in the Orient from?
Yeah, so East Asia is all a pretty quick flight away from Korea. Japan, we went to a couple times. That one's super easy. Just a hop of across a small body of water.
Right.
Vietnam's not too far. Hong Kong's not too far. We never did go to China. Other than a layover in Hong Kong, we never went to China, but we had lots of friends that did. That's another easy flight. So definitely a good base for exploring that sort of world.
So did you guys learn the language there?
We learned some. We did take some English. We taught English. we did take some Korean classes while we were there. Both formal and informal. So our program is called English Program in Korea, EPIC, which is what puts native English speakers in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's government funded. So this program, EPIC, had some Korean language classes for, you know, incoming teachers. So we took those, but also we had one of my wife's coworkers offer to give us some English, some Korean language classes too, so that helped. It's actually very easy to learn how to read, unlike Japanese and Chinese. It's an actual alphabet, and it only takes you like a couple of days or a week or so to learn how to read the language. So that's handy.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, we didn't get fluent necessarily, but we did know how to, you know, order at restaurants or generally tell the taxi where to go, that sort of thing. Small conversation, but not fluent.
Right, right. Well, did you, I'm assuming that you learned to love Korean food.
Yeah, we did. I'll be honest with you, like, we kind of oscillated back and forth between really craving Korean food and really craving, you know, anything but Korean food.
Right.
it was kind of coming waves. Like, there were some weeks where we would go out of our way to, you know, hit up this, you know, this restaurant that specialized in this Korean dish, or there were weeks that we went out of our way to go to, you know, a Mexican place or something like that.
You know, it's funny because I think a lot of times some of us Americans feel like that Korea is like a third world country, but in reality it's not at all, is it?
No, not even a little bit. It is a developed country with very highly developed infrastructure and internet. Although maybe the misconception comes from the fact that they've kind of gotten this way relatively quickly. So maybe, you know, if you visited in the 70s or 80s, or maybe even, you know, early 90s, you know, you should be forgiven for thinking, you know, as a developing country, because laws of playing catch up with the Korean War, but they have definitely kind of, you know. So if you go live in the rural areas, I mean, you'll still see some, style housing, like you would use, you know, in the rural places. It's not the newest, you know, version of what we have.
Right.
Same deal.
In writing your book, how long did it take you to write it?
That's a great question. I really don't know. Because, remember, you know, I wrote the foundations of the book years ago, like while we were in Korea. And, like, I fleshed out a little bit more for that Shutterfly book. And then when I decided to make it an actual book, I would wake up early in the morning and get, like, an hour or two in before I, you know, had to go to work. So I really wrote it, like, an hour or two at a time for maybe about 8 months or so.
Right.
Yeah. It's my best guess. I should have paid closer attention to how long it took me to write it.
Well, I was just curious. Most people, I always ask people that because it's funny that answers can vary from 30 days to 5 years, you know, so always just curiosity for me. So in writing your book, you say you had written blogs and published blogs and had sort of done a picture book for yourself.
And I still have the picture book. Bookshelf in my living room.
Uh-huh.
It's a Lord of the Rings thing, but it looks like the very back again book that Bilbo Baggins wrote.
Nice.
Yeah.
So in writing the
book, if you read the Waygook book, you will also see some Lord of the Rings.
Okay. All right. In writing the book, what was your largest obstacle in getting it completed?
I did a lot of self-editing, you know, a lot of drafts, a lot of rearranging, chapters, a lot of deciding, you know, that this paragraph didn't work, or it was missing out completely. That's what took the longest, I would say. Obviously, hardly any of this. Write something great in the first draft. And so it's just write draft after draft after draft.
I would think it would be a tough kind of book to write because if you're living there and you've lived there, you have experience and it's very crystal clear. And you were kind of writing this for somebody that hadn't been there so they could enjoy the trip more. So I would think it would take a lot of thought.
It did, and, you know, I took a lot of pictures, but not quite enough, you know, to paint a vivid picture on page, you know, you need some written script. Luckily, a good friend of ours that was there while we were, a fellow English teacher, had taken lots of pictures, and had an even more detailed blog running. So that was a good reference to use in a lot of the same places we were originally terrible more time to experience as we did. Yeah.
Right. And did you publish your book yourself or did you go traditional route?
I went the traditional route. So I queried several different places. I realized I was maybe aiming too big. I needed to find a more local publisher, and I ended up finding One Day Creek Publishing, which is out of the Hocking Hills region down there by Nelsonville. And Monday Creek Publishing picked me up, and we went from there.
That's a really good publishing company. Gina McKnight is just wonderful to work with.
Yeah, she is. Really takes a personal approach to all her authors.
Yeah, I've enjoyed working with all of her authors as well. And she attracts very nice clients.
Yeah, she does.
So is this the only book you have published so far?
No, I actually have a second book. So I wrote the recently released Moon Ohio guidebook, if you're familiar with the Moon guidebook series, similar to Lonely Planet or Fodor. It's just, you know, more generic travel guides for different regions, either a city or a state or a country.
Okay.
And Moon, I actually applied for this position, but Moon finds local writers for their guidebook. I applied, I wrote a proposal for the book, and they accepted me. So I started that project in January 2020. And I'm sure you remember what March 2020 looked like.
Yeah.
Not the best thing to write a travel guidebook. So that project ended up getting delayed. It was supposed to come out in 2021, ended up finally coming out in June 2022. So that's out on bookshelves and Barnes & Noble and local bookstores on Amazon. And that's through a major publisher, which is pretty exciting.
It's a
publisher that does the Rick Steves guidebook. So that's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. Now, how have you found it to be different working with a medium-sized publisher versus a large publisher? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed definitely a lot of turnover at, you know, the larger company where it's like, you know, luckily the editor stayed the same, but some of the other, like the marketing or graphics, that sort of thing, it's like, oh, well, this person left the company, so now you're talking to this person, and they've been kind of playing catch-up for a little bit. So that's a little different. Now, obviously, they have more resources as a larger company, so that's one advantage. But you know, I also don't feel like I have a personal connection with anybody there.
Right.
Kind of a disadvantage.
Do you?
You can kind of weigh pros and cons.
Do you feel like they do a lot of marketing for you? Or because what I've not published traditionally, but what I've heard in the past was that the traditional publishing companies kind of give you a little send off for a couple weeks and then you're on your own.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That sounds about right.
I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just something you need to know.
Yes, right. So there is that initial push as they, you know, they've got their own email list and their own social media, and, you know, obviously they're sending their books to the major bookstores, which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't necessarily help you get book signings or author visits or anything like that. If you want to schedule an author event at a bookstore, kind of have to do them differently. But then again, you know, this is a travel guidebook, which is not a traditional book that you would normally have, you know,
right,
a lot of author visits or something like that. But I did find it a little different, and I kind of wish, like, hey, what can you do? Like, I'm going to do book events, you know, that'd be interesting. But anyway, that's one thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad thing. Like I say, it's just, you know, a lot of time, I know when I wrote my book, I thought the hard part was writing the book, but I was wrong. The hard part starts after you're done.
Yeah.
So do you have a third book in the works?
I don't right now. So right now I'm working full time again, and we had our second kid in July, so we're kind of in that mode. We're taking care of a baby mode and kind of working. I'd like to get back into writing at some point, but priority number one is getting a full night's sleep.
Sure. Absolutely. Any advice for folks that are in the process of writing a book or marketing a book that you could share with us?
If you're currently writing a book, I would say, first off, that's awesome, and keep at it. I know people are just like, I don't know, I don't have time. And the answer that no one wants to hear, but it's the truest answer there is that, well, you're just going to have to make time. You're going to have to sleep less. You're going to have to give up, you know, a hobby or something else. Like, if you're going to say that writing is a priority, you're going to have to treat it as a priority. which stinks to hear. But, you know, like I said before, like, you know, I set my alarm clock earlier and I worked for an hour or two before, you know, I had to go to work. In terms of marketing, the good marketing device, obviously, you know, you want to get your social media up and running, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you're most comfortable with. Stick with it on a regular schedule of posting. I don't do the greatest job of this right now, honestly. I did before where I kind of had a social media calendar.
Yeah.
But that is something to get into for sure.
Very good. And would you write another travel book, or do you have dreams of changing your genre and doing something different?
Well, I'll tell you what. When we moved to Chicago and I went to grad school for writing, I never thought I would be a travel writer.
Yeah.
That's not what I went to grad school for. I was going to write fiction. I'd love to get back into fiction. I don't have any published fiction works out there. I'd love to take another stab at that. But, you know, I've also really enjoyed being a travel writer. I think it'd be great to have a more personal travel journey book about Ohio or the Great Lakes or something like that. So we'll see. I'm kind of open to what the next project's going to be, but I definitely want to get into something here pretty soon.
Well, I could see you writing a travel book for a family with small children, you know, because that's a different set of obstacles.
Yes, that is very true. How to travel Ohio with young kids. Yep,
yeah.
Children definitely change the travel dynamic.
It does. I took my grandkids. My grandkids lived in California, and we live in North Carolina, and I met them in Las Vegas because, I wanted to go to Vegas, and they did too. But when we got there, there was really, at that time, nothing for the kids to do. And we had to drive like 40 miles to a McDonald's that had a playground. So, you know, from that aspect, it would be fun to have that information, you know, where are all those things that you need to know for little kids?
Yeah, yep.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And how can people find your two books?
Yeah, so the Wingate book is on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com these days. Or Moon, Ohio, I would just visit your local bookstore, especially if you're in Ohio or in one of the surrounding states. Almost any bookstore should have it, especially Barnes & Noble. If you're beyond Ohio or the Midwest, I have seen it. I was in North Carolina myself a couple months ago, and I spotted it at a Barnes & Noble in Asheville. Cool.
Yeah.
But again, Amazon bookstores, it's pretty ubiquitous.
And do you have an author page that people can follow you on?
Yeah, it's actually just my name, MatthewCaracciolo.com.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So everybody out there listening, if you're thinking about traveling to one of these areas, be sure and pick up a copy of Matthew's book. And makes nice gifts for people, too, that are going to be traveling. And follow him on Facebook. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Thank you for your time this afternoon. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And as always, folks, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Everybody has a story. Just let your mind drift away and find yours. I know it's out there. What are you waiting for?